Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. In just a decade ending in 2012, more than 150 people were killed in police pursuits in Missouri and Kansas. Some of those were innocent bystanders who were just in the wrong place at the very wrong time. Now, an investigation by the Hale Center for Journalism at KCPT reveals a patchwork of dozens of different policies that dictate when and under what circumstances police can conduct high-speed pursuits. Here to talk about the results of their investigation into all this are Mike McGraw. He's a special projects reporter at Kansas City Public Television. He's also a winner of the Pulitzer Prize. Mike, nice to see you again. Welcome.
Good to see you, Steve.
Bridget Bowden is a multimedia reporter for KCPT's Flatland. Bridget, nice to have you too. Welcome.
Thanks.
Well, Mike, I think what surprised me about your story yesterday in The Star is the scale of some of these different pursuits. I mean, speeds of 80 miles an hour and more, racing through busy intersections at rush hour, racing between houses. I couldn't believe what I was reading. Why do police do something that's this dangerous?
Well, that particular pursuit was the Emma Rothbus pursuit 10 years ago, and I would say that a lot of area cities, particularly the bigger cities, KCK and Kansas City, have changed their policies and made them a little more restrictive. At the time, however, the Grandview police, and this is the problem with pursuits, once you start a pursuit in your home district and you move into another jurisdiction, you live under your home district rules.
Huh.
So that particular pursuit in Leawood, the Leawood police did not participate in it because they wouldn't participate in that kind of a pursuit, which was billed at the time as a stolen car pursuit. So Grandview continued into Leawood under their home policy, which was, at the time, pretty much pursue at the officer's discretion.
Mm-hmm. Bridget, what surprised you about what you guys came up with in terms of how these cities manage these high-speed pursuits?
I think the most surprising thing to me was actually just the amount of jurisdictions. I'm fairly new to Kansas City, and we looked at a map of just how many police jurisdictions there are in the metro area. And some of them are teeny, teeny, tiny. There are parts of town where you can drive through five or six jurisdictions within a matter of miles.
Mm-hmm. And so what you came up with then is this, I think you guys called it this crazy patchwork quilt of different policies that vary, again, almost from mile to mile, depending on where you are in the metro.
Right. So the policies in all of these jurisdictions don't necessarily match up. So some of them may allow you to pursue for traffic violations, and others are more strict and only allow pursuits for felonies or even violent felonies.
Yeah. Mike, what were some of the most suspect reasons for police pursuits that you guys came across?
Oh, one of the things we did to try to get data was we analyzed more than 100 news stories in The Star and the AP over the last decade, and we found some pursuits that began over things like shoplifting.
Hmm. Shoplifting.
Yeah.
And that's all it took to trigger something as multifaceted as a high-speed police pursuit.
Right. Now, during the pursuit, once the pursuit begins, officers can also decide to continue it based on, oh, his erratic driving is putting other motorists in jeopardy. So sometimes once a pursuit begins over a minor issue, it can escalate into a major issue like putting other motorists in danger.
But that erratic driving is the result of the pursuit, though, right?
That's what most people argue. And some data shows that if you backed off and terminated the pursuit, that kind of driving would end. I don't think it's always the case, but according to many experts, it's often the case.
You know, Bridget, I'm just confused on one point here. We're in an age of helicopters, and police departments have these things that go up in the air and can track, you know, a suspect vehicle in a lot of places, maybe not everywhere, but in a whole lot of places. So why do we even have high-speed pursuits in this modern age when you have helicopters at your disposal?
Well, that's a great question, and there are actually other tools that are being developed that we didn't feature in the story to help cut down on the number of pursuits. There's one called Star Chase that actually shoots a little dart at the pursuing or the vehicle that's being pursued, and it tracks it with GPS.
I was just going to say, yeah. What a neat idea.
Right.
Yeah.
And I actually read a news story the other day that there was a pursuit where the vehicle had OnStar, and OnStar was able to shut that vehicle down.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. There are a lot of emerging technologies that could cut down on the number of pursuits. Where we are as far as being able to utilize those in the metro, I'm not so sure.
But in the meantime, we have, as we just talked about, we have this crazy patchwork quilt of policies that vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. We have 60 jurisdictions in the metro or some number like that. And people can't come together to come up with a unified policy. Why?
Well, so police chiefs all sort of disagree on this issue. There are some chiefs that think, yeah, unified policy would be great. Other chiefs really want to be in control of everything that happens in their jurisdiction, mm-hmm. which is understandable because their names are on the lawsuits. Mm-hmm. So we've got two sides here. And then there's the question of, is implementing a universal policy even possible? Because all of these little jurisdictions have their own elected officials, they have their own attorneys, they have their own insurance people. So it would be incredibly complicated as well.
So Mike McGraw, politics plays into this. City councils want to say this gets complicated pretty quickly is what the point here is.
Sure. I think that's the case all across the metro and in any number of other metro areas across the country. In fact, police pursuits are an issue in the current mayoral election in Milwaukee. They have a don't pursue except in violent felonies policy. One of the aldermen who's running against the mayor for re-election in the spring has said, look, our pursue only for violent felonies policy has caused a spike in stolen cars in Milwaukee because car thieves know you're not going to chase them. And so it's become an issue in the mayoral election.
But would anybody argue we should be chasing and engaging in high-speed pursuits for stolen cars, Mike?
Actually, there was a few years ago, University of Missouri St. Louis did a mail-in survey, so it's not scientifically perfect, but it was a mail-in survey of residents in St. Louis County who actually said, a majority of them said, I want to pursue over stolen cars because, you know, my car was stolen or we're having a lot of stolen cars in our area. So I think the public is all over the place on this, depending in part whether they've been a victim of a crime, major or minor, and in part whether they know somebody who's been hurt or killed in a pursuit.
You know, this is apropos to nothing, but a few years ago I was sitting at the intersection of Broadway and Southwest Boulevard going home one night with a colleague, Mike Casey. You know Mike Casey,
yeah.
Mike, and my car was in the shop, so he's driving me home. We're sitting there at a red light. You know, it's high speed, high traffic time. It's rush hour. And then out of nowhere, you hear sirens, and then a second or two later, you know, a couple of police cars chasing a third vehicle, flashing by our vehicle within just, it felt like inches from our car. The whole car shook as those cars raced by. And he and I looked at each other. That's as close as I've come to who knows what at that point in my life. It was unbelievable what we just witnessed there.
Well, actually, in the Rothbers case, which was a watershed moment for pursuit policies here in the metro, in the Rothbers case, these Grandview officers were going through Leawood at speeds up to 88 miles an hour. And at 115th and Knoll, I believe was the intersection, they were speeding at 10 o'clock on a Friday night. They were pursuing through that intersection. So you have the fleeing car, the lead Grandview car, and a follow-up Grandview car, which is the car that hit Rothbers. At 10 p.m. at 115th at Knoll on a Friday night. I mean, that's the reason those guys got in trouble and had misdemeanor reckless driving charges against them, apparently, is because they didn't slow down for a red light, at least slow down a little bit, which is Kansas law.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up with reckless driving charges. And all the area police chiefs got very upset. And that's when they first started talking about, should we kind of think about our policies?
But even then,
of course,
Bridget,
that went nowhere.
Even then, Bridget, those were misdemeanor reckless driving charges. That really stood out to me in your article yesterday.
Right.
Yeah. They it wasn't a felony charge.
No, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
However, the prosecutor at the time said this should keep them from ever working as police officers again. And as we know from the story, one of them was hired as a Jackson County Sheriff's Deputy.
There you go. Let me get our listeners involved here. What do you think the policy should be for high-speed police pursuits? Is it out of control or does it need to be happening just the way it is? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Well, one of the good news pieces here, one of the interesting developments out of this story, Mike, is that you guys, I know Mark, the Mid-America Regional Council, is interested in at least taking a look here.
Right. Mark has waded into a few legal issues in the last few years, but they've never waded deeply into the pursuit issue. They've kind of left that up to the Metro Chiefs and Sheriffs Association. But now I think, from what I've heard, they're willing to at least start a conversation about it.
Well, we're going to have a representative from Mark on the line here in just a moment. Bridget, let's run down some numbers here. I mean, just roughly, how many police pursuits have occurred in the Kansas City area in recent years? You have ballpark numbers for us?
So we actually don't know the number of pursuits, but there have been about 706 pursuit crashes.
Mm-hmm. In how many years?
In about 10 years.
706 crashes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And from that, about 23 people were killed, and hundreds were injured. We're not exactly sure on the injuries number.
Do you have any sense of how that compares to other municipalities around the country?
Municipalities, no, but I do know that as far as states, Texas and California have very high numbers. Of course, they have very large populations.
Mm-hmm.
In Missouri, in the last decade, well, 2003 to 2013, we had 127 killed. In that same decade, there were 47 killed in Kansas.
Hmm. Okay, I want to bring into our conversation Keith Faddis. He's the Director of Public Safety Programs at the Mid-America Regional Council. He joins us on the phone this morning from his office. And Keith, it's nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, our staff spoke with you and Mark Executive Director David Warren just this morning, and David said that Mark is going to start a conversation with department leaders and public officials about some kind of unified policy in the metro, and it'll start that conversation with the facts. How willing do you think law enforcement departments will be to gather around the conference table and begin this conversation?
Well, pursuits are always something that, that police departments look at and review, and I think the article brings a number of points to the forefront, and I think they'll probably be interested in sitting down and looking at it again.
And how difficult a road ahead do you anticipate here, Keith?
Well, it's very complicated because, as you said, there are a number of jurisdictions involved, a number of different department philosophies, traditions. It could be a time-consuming process.
Oh, help me here a little bit. Why is this so complicated? Because on the one hand, it appears that it wouldn't be that tough to say that, you know, we're going to pursue these types of cases and we're not going to pursue these other types of cases. Why is this so tough to figure out?
Part of it has to do with the variables of the circumstances. As Mike said earlier, the pursuit that went through 115th and Null at 10 o'clock at night is a different pursuit that goes through there at 4 o'clock on a Thursday morning. The circumstances can vary, and the general rule is that the need to apprehend should outweigh the risk created by the pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you come up with specifics that are related to that? That becomes a challenge.
How confident are you that you can come up with some kind of policy here that's going to put all this stuff to rest?
That will be a challenge. I don't disagree with that because of the variables involved in it. And a good piece of that is the training.
Mm-hmm.
Off have to be trained consistently on things such as use of force. Pursuit policy is another one that they need to know right away. This is when I can pursue. This is when I can't. They need to know how to evaluate the situation, and it needs to be done in a short period of time. So training is a key component to this.
Let's talk about culture and attitude. You know, different departments, different cities have different cultures when it comes to this. Can you explain that to me and walk me through that, Keith?
Well, some departments may decide that they're going to, the need to apprehend is always there. Some may say, no, it's not. So it just depends upon the climate of the city, the policies have been set over time. It can just vary. Every city is different. That's the shortest way to say it.
But again, it's just a reader of the story looking on here that the risk these officers take in launching one of these things, particularly during high traffic periods, strike me as just enormous. We're playing Russian roulette with the public to some extent, aren't we, Keith?
Well, most departments have a supervisory review. I mean, the supervisor And I can't speak for every policy, but the supervisor is informed immediately if a pursuit initiates, and if it's not for one of the reasons they can pursue for them, they're expected to terminate the pursuit. In some cases, some cities may have to even get permission from a supervisor before a pursuit. So some things are in place, but yes, anytime you're driving a vehicle at with emergency equipment, whether it's a pursuit or whether it's to a injury accident or some other immediate need for police presence, it's always a dangerous situation.
You know, Mike McGraw, it strikes me as tricky here. If you're asking for permission during the course of a pursuit, if you're asking for permission prior to a pursuit, how does that really work out in the real world?
Well, I think it's complicated by the fact that these pursuit policies themselves are complicated. Some of these policies are 11 pages, 12 pages, 14 pages long. Some of them even have a decision matrix for the officer, you know, at a time of high stress when he's trying to decide whether to pursue or not.
Yeah.
I do not envy police officers in this situation at all. And to try to distill that policy in a certain situation where you've got a guy running and you don't know what he's going to do once he starts running, I really don't envy police officers who have to try to make that decision.
Bridget Bowden, you're nodding your head as Mike is saying that. You feel the same way.
Right. I've spoken to several chiefs about how difficult it is for the officers to make these split-second decisions. And everyone I've talked to has repeatedly stressed how important training is because of that.
And even to put a supervisor on the spot at a moment like that and to be radioing in saying, here's my circumstance, here's what I'm doing, and the supervisor sitting in a building 5 miles away is supposed to make this call too. I don't know how that works.
Right. Another interesting role is the dispatcher.
Ah.
Because the dispatcher has to sort of be able to see the big picture and know what jurisdictions the pursuit might be heading into, who they should contact, should they initiate the metro-wide communications protocol. They sort of have to be able to do it all.
Man, okay. Let's go to some phone calls here. And Wesley from Blue Springs was a Kansas City Police Department officer back in the 60s. Wesley, good morning. Nice to have you.
Good morning.
Go ahead. Tell us about your experience, Wesley.
Well, all I remember is when we went through the police academy, we were told that when we get an emergency call, which meant you used red lights and sirens, you were to go 25 miles an hour through any intersection and only 10 miles an hour over the speed limit elsewhere. And they didn't make any sort of a distinction between whether it was the emergency of the car, whether it was really dire or not. It's just the way it was. It was a flat plan. Now, this was back then, of course. I will say this, the rule was broken many times. If you got a call, officer in distress, well, that rule was broken all the time. Hmm. And then the other thing is, I want to say something about emotions. A policeman is a human being, and when they're in pursuit of someone, they tend to get emotional, and they don't want that person to elude them. And so that's where the emotions come in. And I've never heard of a situation where you would ask a supervisor for permission. Maybe that's newer nowadays, but it wasn't back then.
So testosterone, Wesley, becomes a factor in all this.
You're right. I'm not going to let that guy get away from me.
Mm-hmm.
Type attitude.
As you look back on it now and reflect on your own experience, Wesley, what do you think the policy should be? What should it look like?
I think it should be similar to what it was. I'm appalled at how many accidents I see now over trivial. It starts out as hardly anything, and then we end up having deaths or serious injuries. And nothing's worth that, I don't think. Unless that car that's fleeing is shooting guns out the window. Like you mentioned earlier, a helicopter can be a very useful tool in helping the officers on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Wesley, I'm glad you called. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
You know, Mike McGraw, have other metropolitan communities somehow been able to crack the code here and come up with pursuit policies that, you know, smaller cities around that major city can agree with, maybe a metropolitan area similar to Kansas City? Has any place gotten on the same page?
Well, there have been talk about it in places like Broward County and places like Jackson, Mississippi, but they've never gotten very far. And I was thinking maybe Kansas City could kind of set the standard here, given the number of pursuit crashes. But there have been issues. As you probably know from the story, state law can also dictate the conditions under which a pursuit begins. And in Mississippi several years ago, they tried to, because of the activities of a family of someone who was killed in a pursuit, they pushed a state law to limit pursuits statewide to just violent felonies. And that went down, that crashed almost immediately, partly because police officers who don't want that decision-making process taken out of their own hands lobbied against it.
Keith Faddis, back with us here from the Mid-America Regional Council. What about other communities? What have you seen in terms of other metropolitan cities? Have they come up with a uniform policy that seems to work?
I'm not familiar with one.
So there's no standard out there that we're shooting for here that you're aware of?
No.
Now, there is a model policy that the International Association of Chiefs of Police have put out. Some individual departments have adopted it, but I'm not familiar with a whole metro area adopting it.
Yeah. Bridget, how did you guys decide to focus on this particular story? What got you going on it?
The officer that Mike mentioned earlier, who was convicted of reckless driving in the Rothbrust case, we started looking into that and then just discovered a gold mine of really interesting information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once we started looking at the number of policies and the amount that they conflict, we just couldn't turn away.
You know, as a former police reporter, I'm surprised this hasn't been a bigger issue over the years than it has been.
Well, I think the Star's done a good job of covering police individual pursuits, that especially ones that ended in deaths and injuries. But in terms of looking at the whole metro area and trying to figure out what's going on metro-wide and the conflicting policies, no one had thought to do that. Now, I'm concerned in that several departments, the Missouri Highway Patrol, the Kansas Highway Patrol, Overland Park, either heavily redacted the policies that they allowed us to look at, KCK would be another one, or they refused to release them at all under the state open records law, saying, hey, that's a part of an investigative process that we're not going to share with
you. Even the policies we're talking
about.
Even
the policies. And we have voices in the story saying, I don't understand that. Policies should be a matter of public record.
Yeah. You know, one other thing that you guys looked at here was how tough it is even for innocent victims to get justice when they've been wronged or it appears they've been wronged. Bridget, what did you find out there?
Mike, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, Mike.
That's especially true on the Missouri side because of a precedent-setting case out of Independence, which held that if you're injured by a car fleeing in a police pursuit, that's not on the city. You can't sue the city. If you're injured by a pursuing officer whose car runs into your car and you're an innocent bystander, you can sue and collect on that. However,
I thought that was really interesting.
There's a current case that may get Supreme Court review on the state level that could overturn that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So several lawyers are trying to get it overturned because it's frustrated a lot of victims who've been hit by fleeing drivers.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, Keith, when you think the Mid-America Regional Council might start reaching out to get this conversation going?
Well, we have regular conversations with our local law enforcement, and I think probably once the article has been circulated through, we may be reaching out to them very shortly.
Yeah, okay. Well, Keith Faddis, Director of Public Safety at the Mid-America Regional Council, thank you for your time today. I sure appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Mike McGraw and Bridget Bowden, both with KCPT, thank you very much for a very enlightening conversation, and keep pursuing it, okay, guys?
Thanks, sir.